and welcome to Unbox, the Geek Show's only TV show on the Geek Show Network. Podcast Network.
What was that? that was some weird Parallel Network.
Yes.
Parallel Network. Puddle Network.
Parallel. Parallel sounds more fun than the Puddle Network. The Waterworks. Waterworks Network.
Help me, Andrew. Help me. I don't know what's going on.
Seven.
I don't think anyone does.
Nice way on the word, just throwing a random number in there as well. Yes. Ready for that one.
Right, we have a full complement today. Joining me, Rob, the master of proceedings, not. I am currently the Hunger Games. Katniss Everdeen got nothing on me. I haven't had breakfast. I am currently the Hunger Games and the ultimate version of the Hunger Games. Joining me today are the wonderful Andrew.
Hello.
Who is the most evil man alive, I think you'll find.
Oh, thanks, Bob.
Yes. Jordan.
Me.
Over there. Who really wants to be a steam train engineer?
Pretty much.
But doesn't have the dungarees for it.
Do you have a flat cap?
Yes.
Well, he's halfway there. Halfway there.
And over there is Andrew.
Yeah.
Who doesn't have a train?
Andrew. No. He is Andy. He is Andy.
But he doesn't have fish eyes today.
Yeah, I know. There's no bishy eyes. There's no bishy eyes on Andy these today. He's got his glasses on. I think he's afraid of us mocking his bishy eyes.
Which we did anyway.
Yeah, we'll still mock him anyway for something else.
And right next to me is Owen, who ate food next to me while he knew I was hungry.
Yes, I've still got a Pittsburgher as well.
Yes.
So you call me evil, but Owen is actually a sadist.
I was offended you called him the most evil person.
It's out of my sphere of influence.
That's just teasing.
It's just out of my sphere of influence.
You call Andrew the most evil person, and yet I'm here with food just out of your reach.
Yes.
Okay. I'm just waiting until Rob is even more hungry to whip out my food.
Well, and on that note.
I think Andrew is hungry. I think he needs brain food.
It's not my fault the mouse mat has done bad things to me.
Yes, that mouse mat of unspeakable things.
Yeah, it's shameful. It's shameful.
I think that should be the name of the show.
It's shameful, and we have three of them.
That should be the name of the show. The mouse mat done bad things to me.
No, we have three of them. So
the mouse mat's done bad things to me then.
No, technically it's a harem. So there you go. Anyway, we are on the box and we're going to kick off with the news. So who's got the first news?
I'll go first.
Okay.
I'll go first. Are we all aware of the Taken film series?
Nope, never heard of them.
No, I don't know what you're talking about.
The Taken film series, of course, as people know, is one of the most...
Oh, hang on. Is this the one where, in the first movie, Liam Neeson took his daughter to the shops and in the second one took her to a family restaurant, and in the third movie, he basically took her shopping? Is that what Taken's all about?
No, the third one was where there was a comical misunderstanding and he ended up in a Tekken tournament.
That was a good film.
That was a good one.
That was actually quite good.
Right, anyway, yes. Taken. I think from our mocking, it's obvious we know what you're talking about.
See, this is why I should learn not to ask questions, you know, just kind of get people involved.
It's the age old thing. If you ask a silly question, you get a funny answer.
Yes. Well, I was asking it ironically. You know, people suppose,
but you should be asking rhetorically, not ironically.
Okay, I'll make a note of that. Anyway, there's the buzz going around that it's going to be made into a TV series.
Say what?
it's kind of one of those.
It is one of those situations. I mean, how do you make Taken into a TV series? Is he just going after kidnappers every single week?
Well,
he's not a very good parent.
And please. Basically, did you just go, well...
I made no hand gestures.
Did you just do the two hands flapping down? Well,
It
sounds like a gangster version of Jeremy Kyle.
No, if that's the gangster version of Jeremy Kyle,
No, not that. If that was a gangster version of Jeremy Kyle,
No. If that's gangster in Jeremy Kyle. Shh.
Just I'm remember, sorry. Brian Mills has a very particular set of skills.
Anyway, it's set as a prequel before the Taken films. It's talking about Brian Mills, which I believe is Liam Neeson's character, mm-hmm. how he sort of got his training and sort of his development as that character. Liam Neeson is reported not to be involved with this, but...
I would be worried if he was involved with this, because it's a prequel. So I would assume that it's set before his daughter was born.
Yes.
And if he's playing a man who's, 20 years younger than Liam himself. Neeson, who's already playing a man who's 20 years younger than himself... There's some serious voodoo going on here.
Well, perhaps it'll just show that Liam Neeson is ageless, and he'll be like cockroaches. He'll be here long after we're gone.
He's a Cylon.
He's a Jedi.
Wow.
Well, it's probably Luc Besson. Yeah, Luc Besson. Who? Why did I put a French twist to that?
Because he's French.
Oh, well, fair enough. okay.
Answer.
Anyway, Luc Besson, who wrote Taken films, who was the writer for Taken films, is actually going to be involved in this. So it is.
Was he like a producer or something?
I think he's producer/writer.
Okay.
I think he's got Matthew Goss as well.
Matt Goss?
Yeah.
Really?
I believe so, yeah.
That'll be interesting then.
So at least we know.
At least we can expect the gritty writing like from the Taken films.
Exactly, yeah. So it will.
So at least to continue at least something from the film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would like to see like Liam Neeson making like a little cameo or something like Harrison Ford did in the Indiana Jones series. I know people aren't particularly big on that, but it's still nice to see Harrison Ford doing that.
Yeah, but the thing is, I don't think he could do it in this because it's supposed to be the younger version of Brian Mills.
If it was a sequel,
was a sequel to take,
I'd go with it
with somebody else. Then yeah, fine.
If it was a prequel,
it eventually gets revealed that in Taken 4, his daughter was kidnapped by time traveling aliens.
Yeah, and that's the problem I have the time traveling part. You know, if he appears in his own prequel. You know, isn't that like the Ouroboros thing from Red Dwarf, where there's a potential for Liam Neeson to be his own dad or granddad. There's a time loop. The universe is going to end, man.
Isn't that a Futurama thing as well?
I was just thinking of making it so that the Taken series is actually just a stealth prequel to the new Taken series where Brian Mills is Time Cop.
Where Liam Neeson and Jean-Claude Van Damme have merged into one being.
No, what I'm saying is, because I'm guessing you didn't watch the Indiana Jones TV series.
No.
That was set before the Indiana Jones films. Harrison Ford still made a cameo appearance.
When did the TV series come out?
I think it was around two. I can't remember it.
Yeah,
I think
it was like late 90s, early 2000s,
yeah.
I think.
Hang on. Yeah, that Indiana Jones TV series, the one that was made after Last Crusade.
Because
apparently the beginning of Last Crusade with River Phoenix was so wonderfully shot and so wonderfully done. We must make a TV series out of young Indiana Jones.
Don't you diss the young Indiana Jones adventures.
I like them.
Yeah.
And what are you dissing them for?
I'm not dissing them.
Well, there
I'm
we
dissing
go.
The first part of the third movie, Last Crusade.
The official last movie of Indiana Jones.
I'm dissing that first part because everybody's going, because River Phoenix is in it, it's so wonderful.
See, it sounded about like you were saying that the idea of having an Indiana Jones prequel is unnecessary.
No, I think it's not. I think Indiana Jones is one of the few characters that really should have a prequel.
Yeah, it's a great origin for him. And
this is what Cowboys versus Indians was, wasn't it?
Hmm? Oh,
Cowboys versus Indians was. That was
a lot. Oh my god! Indiana Jones's great grandfather.
Yes,
it was. Anyway. So Taken is going to be a TV series. Who's excited about this?
Well, I've never watched a Taken film,
so... I'm excited
to
see how bad it is.
So that happened.
I just want to know if anybody actually gets Taken in this. Because in the third film, nobody does.
Well, like I said earlier...
Nobody's wife and daughter gets killed, didn't it? Spoiler alert!
Spoiler alert!
In all fairness, the film came out in 2011, right? So yeah.
But I still haven't watched it. Spoiler alert!
To be fair, the reveal that his wife gets killed in the trailer.
Yeah, that's true, actually.
That is actually true. Well, there's no point in me watching any Taken film now. I'll just delete them.
Yeah, that's when her life gets taken. Which I don't think they don't even say that in the film.
It's a play, on it, basically.
Well, yeah, but, you know, maybe... You know when you say this is a prequel where he learned all his skills... All his skills, sorry. You know, he's got a very particular set of skills.
Oh, God, you stole that from his...
But the thing is, which skills are they talking about? Are they talking about his CIA skills, his military skills, or his parenting skills? Talk about Taken, is it him taking, you know, it has his daughter pooed and he has to change the nappy and then take the nappy out? You know, what are we talking about? Is he taking her to preschool? You know, is he taking her to the cinema? Is he taking her for ice cream? Is that what Taken is, though? Is it like the Teletubbies version of Taken?
That's still a terrifying idea.
It would be called Taken, though.
Everyone knows that as soon as Brian Mills gets into a car, about 7 people die.
Oh, God. Can you just imagine him trying to, like, dealing with the first boyfriend? If you hurt my daughter, I will find you and I will kill you.
And then he winks to camera.
Yes. See, this is a bad thing, though.
Can you say shotgun wedding?
If Neeson's not in it like that, like, they can't really use...
Oh, no, do you know what I'm thinking of? I've basically flipped over to a different Liam Neeson movie, Next of Kin.
The worst thing is, as soon as you say Liam Neeson, for me, though, the first thing I always press my head about is Bad Cop from the Lego movie.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yes. That's the only thing I always think of, like, ah.
All right, we're going to move on, So, what's next? Who's got the next story?
Speaking of things that don't need to be turned into TV series... Apparently, they're making The Mist into a TV series, the Stephen King book that was turned into a pretty decent horror film.
The Mist, as in the fog. No, The Mist is a different, completely different movie. As in, you know, there's weird monsters out in the mist.
Don't go into the mist.
We must travel through the mist to escape, and then basically, at the end, everybody but one dies, and then there's the big twist kind of thing.
Spoiler alert!
That one. Yeah,
that one.
So, how do it work with it? It would be like set in a different town, how they're kind of surviving.
Yeah, apparently it's going to be like a completely new original story, but I assume set kind of in the same world where the mist is covered.
Story if it's based off a film?
Yeah, I think it's going to be original in that it's not going to be connected to the story of like the original book and film. It's going to be kind of just set in the same world, but like... somewhere else.
It'll be original story, but not an original premise.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, they might use bits and pieces from the actual book, book.
Yeah, probably stuff that didn't make it into the film.
Yeah.
I'm assuming, is Stephen King actually involved in this in any way?
I don't think he's involved, but he has given it his blessing.
Well, that's all we...
He's heard about it and he said...
Yeah, send me checks.
That's what I was about to say. He's heard about it when... Money!
Is Stephen King essentially the godfather in this
situation?
It's not the first Stephen King book to be turned into a film.
Is it the first one to be turned into a series?
I doubt it, but...
It was taken down as a TV miniseries rather than a film.
Yeah, but then got turned into a film instead. Carrie got turned into a film now. The Mist is the first one to be turned into a series, isn't it?
It's like the first one that's been
turned into a full series.
Oh, wait, now we've got a head shake from Other Rob.
We have just been informed the head shake from Rob was meaningful. We have just been informed Salem's Lot, which I actually watched as a kid and scared the bejesus out of me. Do you know what I found the scariest bit of Salem's Lot when I was a kid? Was the creepy kid floating outside the window, tapping on it.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds just creepy.
I did say it was creepy. outside the window.
Well, then. That's confirmation. No, it's creepy to watch, but just listening to it, just being described, just sounds creepy.
So, yeah, creepy kid. From that moment on, I never trusted any children in a horror movie ever again.
And then you watched The Omen.
No, I never trusted Damien from the outset. I knew what Damien was.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
I think it's just good, but don't trust children in general.
So that you're basically telling them not to trust us.
Well, you're the only child. You're the youngest one here, so you're the child.
He does have a point, Owen. You are the youngest.
21, so still young.
Anyway,
younger than all y'all.
So yes, you are still the child.
Yes.
And I think that cements the proof as well. So
yeah. Anyway, right. Moving on from a very what seems to be a rather
interesting,
I'd say odd idea.
Yeah, like I really don't see how they're going to spin that out into even like one thing is, series.
The only way they could do it is if you did like other people in whatever town, and you focus on the stories of other people. Mm. And that is literally the only way you could do it.
I think it's going to be worked out like The Walking Dead then.
Yeah.
But the thing is, The Walking Dead's been done.
Yeah, but I mean...
And there are loads of variations like Zed Nation and various stuff like that. You know, there are loads of spin-offs of The Walking Dead. This is basically, you know, okay, you can't see what's out there. He got stolen by some weird tentacle monster that appeared from nowhere.
Also, we don't have to fully animate because of the mist.
The thing that bugs me... No. The thing that bugs me about this... They called it The Mist and not The Fog. But I watched the movie and it's definitely a fog.
Oh, that is fog.
Because a mist is around your ankles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is fog.
You can't
fog.
Call it The Fog, though. Because The Fog is a completely different horror movie.
But that's
it's still roughly the same.
But that's what I'm saying. Fog is what covers you entirely, right? Mist is around your ankles, right?
Wouldn't so calling it The Mist,
that's what I'm saying. Calling it The Mist, I just have this mental image of a town that's covered by low-lying fog around your ankles and you can't see what's under it. Oh, no, what did I just step in?
Like when you talk about what,
and then you moonwalk on the glass.
Nice.
I reckon that's how we developed that walk.
It must have, mustn't it?
Yeah, he stepped in something and then decided to try and wipe it off.
Without actually touching it.
Yes. Anyway,
Like when you saw about what it could look like, you said Walking Dead.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine something similar to Fallen Skies, the first season. You got a large group of people huddled up in one place who've got to try and venture out to find food, water. So I imagine you might have like small teams going out venturing for the kind of supplies where you got a large group trying to survive and coming to terms with what's
they
happening.
They can't go if they go outside.
They
will be attacked by the monsters in the mist because the mist is apparently so thick. And not a fog at all. I'm like a badger now. I'm on the idea. It's a fog, not a mist.
It is.
It needs pirates.
Wow.
I'm crossing brands now.
The original, not the remake.
Yeah. It needs pirates. More pirates in the mist. So, yeah. And gorillas. It needs gorillas as well.
Are you basically just going to take cues from every major movie for the past 20 years and just...
No, that has the word mist in.
Oh, right.
That has anything to do with fog or mist. They're all going in here. You know, it's going to be like gumbo at the end, you know? you know where gumbo is that meal where they just chuck everything in, you know, with rice, and then you eat it and it tastes amazing, yeah?
And then they'll cut to the British version of Mist on the Tyne.
No. Loads of Paul Gascoigne clones. just wandering down doing that.
Okay.
Do you not remember the dance he did for Fog on the Tyne?
Yeah.
That was his dance for Fog on the Tyne. Some northerner you are.
Well,
shall we move on?
Yes, let's move on. Moving
Andy.
On to... No, me first.
You first.
Moving on to a very, very... I'm not sure how this is going to play out. Back in the 1980s, they were doing all sorts of weird and wacky stuff. You know, you had Automan and Manimal, the A-Team, Airwolf, Knight Rider... And amongst all that, you had a TV show where you had a self-made millionaire called Jonathan Hart and his wife, whose first name I've forgotten, let's call her Mrs. Hart.
She's very progressive.
She sounds like she's all heart.
Yeah, I can't remember what her name was, but anyway, they were played by Robert Wagner and Stephanie Powers, and the intro was told from the perspective of their butler, because they had a butler, because he's a self-made millionaire, and they had basically so much time on their hands because they were multi-millionaires that they could basically go around messing about as private investigators.
To make even more money, to become even more bigger millionaires.
No, this is more like a hobby thing for them.
Yeah.
They don't need money.
So it's kind of like if the Scooby-Doo gang were millionaires.
No, it's kind of like if Richard Branson decided to have his own Scooby-Doo gang. And he was Fred. Okay.
There's a TV show I watch.
I'd
love that.
It's more like that. It was called Heart to Heart. Weird thing is, right, Heart to Heart worked because they were supposed to be a married couple and there was some chemistry between Robert Wagner and Stephanie Powers. You could see it on the screen, and in real life there was a little bit of chemistry with them as well. It really worked from the angle of, you know, they had their usual marital problems as well. Nothing overly dramatic. It was all very, you know, lighthearted and fluffy and, you know, nobody really actually... There were people who died, but they were already dead. Nobody actually died kind of thing. You know, it was all very 80s and sanitized and, you know, very A-team violence. Kind of thing.
Basically, they find a murdered corpse who is just a guy who decided to have a little lie down.
Yeah. No, he was actually murdered, but, you know, and then they have to find who the culprit is, and they did, like, the typical kind of 80s cheesy stunts where he's on a quad bike over a surfboard kind of thing.
Well, yeah, you should be, like, the intro, which had, like, the most 80s scene of them, like, jumping out the house as it explodes.
Yeah. They're actually wanting to bring that back. As an LGBT show with a gay couple in the lead roles. Now, I don't mind this at all. I think it's a very progressive move they're making, but the problem I have is that at what point... there's two problems I have. At what point could it work with a gay couple is my main concern. Because there's all these issues with gay marriage for a start, and there's still a lot of people who have issues with gay marriage. Are they actually going to be married? Because they are a married couple in the story. I think that they should be a married gay couple. If you're going to have a gay couple in, they should be married, because marriage brings with it its own kind of relationship. It's a different relationship to just being a couple. You know, you have that legal obligation, you have that, you know, that moral obligation. It pushes your relationship to a different level.
Yeah, I mean, I think they probably will be married, because I don't think it's a coincidence this is happening so soon after the Gay Marriage Rights Act has passed.
Yeah, and I think it's a very progressive move. My other concern, though, is that, fine, this one is being done as an LGBT show. Have no problem with that. But there are certain shows where you just really shouldn't make it an LGBT show because it was fine as it was.
Mm.
And my main worry, my main concern is that with all of the focus on LGBT discussion, that shows that don't actually need to be changed in any way are going to be changed just because somebody wants to cater to a specific market when they don't actually need to. Am I being, you know...
Yeah, I think I kind of get what you're coming at, because I see it a lot in, like, comic books and stuff, where they'll arbitrarily decide, okay, this character is gay now because we need to appeal more to gay readers.
Yeah, and am I being over the top? Am I being prejudicial in it, for thinking like that? Or am I because there are certain, I'm looking at it from the quality of the show. I don't care about, you know, I'm not bothered about the gender identity issues or the gender equality issues. You know, that's not my concern. I'm watching this to be entertained, you know. And if I find something already entertaining, if it's fine to me as it is, you know, am I going to be equally entertained if they basically change the relationship dynamics of it by turning certain characters gay or straight? Because there are some LGBT shows which I've found amazingly funny and amazingly good, you know, but they work because, you know, the characters are, you know, gay or bisexual or whatever. They wouldn't work if the characters were straight.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
But then I guess there's also the argument that if you're not going to change anything, then what's the point in rebooting it?
Yes.
No, that is quite a good argument, actually, for anything.
Yes.
It's not a reboot, then, is it? It's a remake.
A reimagining, aye.
Yes, okay. Moving on to our final news story, then, from Heart to Heart. Because, I don't think we want to dig any deeper into that one. I think I got my point across.
Yeah.
I just like, you know...
I think it's one of them ones, once you watch it like that, then you make your mind up on it.
Well, yeah, I think
just as long as they're not changing it just for the sake of being different.
Yeah, that's my main concern. And my main worry is that they'll start applying it to lots and lots of other shows that don't need it. I mean, you know, if they remade Airwolf, you know, with the gay couple... Or, you know, Knight Rider, suddenly Michael Knight in the remake, you know, he's bisexual or something like that. Which, given the Hoff during the 80s, that was a possibility.
Yeah, exactly. That might actually just be the
standard Knight Rider then.
Yeah, I'm not really helping the argument where Knight Rider is concerned, am I? What if they turned around and said that Mr. T was gay?
I don't think it was ever said he wasn't.
We've never said he was either.
He neither confirmed nor denied.
Okay, maybe he isn't. Maybe I'm not sure where that's coming from.
Maybe we should just put the shovel aside now and move on to the next story.
Yes, let's move on to the next story, which Andy has.
Oh. this is... Everybody knows Donald Trump has been sacked from his... post as hosting The Apprentice.
Has he?
Donald Posteriorgas, you mean? Or shall we just call it like it is, Donald Fart?
No, because I'm caught up on Rick and Morty now.
Well, they started casting for his replacement earlier in the year, and they've just announced who his replacement is. Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Wait, what?
Not until September 2016, but Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Not until September 2016, but still, having the governator take over from Donald Trump, that's quite an achievement. Why are you pointing your finger?
No, I'm saying that's one. Seeing how many we can actually get in for this bit now.
Oh, are we going for Terminator puns?
Yep.
No, people call him the governator because he was the governor of California and the Terminator, and he and Stanley did a cartoon.
Yeah, but I want to see how many we can actually get in.
Oh, you know, now I just want to do Roy Walker catchphrases. See what you see. So yeah,
it's close, but it's not the one.
Even I didn't hear that. I was right next to him, and I didn't hear that.
Look. Anyway, so Arnold Schwarzenegger is going to be taken over from Donald Trump. The big question I've got is how. Second question I've got is why.
On a hosting capacity.
Eh?
On a hosting capacity. Two, because it's Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, I think the real answer to both is who cares, because it's going to be awesome.
I honestly cannot imagine... The looks on the... what they should have done, really, they should have done this, right? This would have been amazing. Brilliant. This would have been the best TV ever. Is if they had the Apprentice guys, you know, and they basically say, okay, you're going to meet the boss after you've done your first challenge, right? So you have the two teams, the men and the women or whatever, right? Or the mixed teams, whatever they are. And the celebrities... go out, and they think that they're going to meet Donald Trump, because I'm assuming this is celebrity.
Yeah, I don't think Apprentice. He actually is an original Apprentice is now in America.
But anyway, they go out and do their stuff. One complication I've just realised with this show. They go out and do their stuff, anyway, and they come back in, and then in walks who they think is supposed to be Donald Trump, but no, it's Arnold Schwarzenegger. And he sits down in the chair that Donald Trump has.
Is he wearing Donald Trump's toupee as well?
He might be. We're not sure. We are still in the process of discovering whether that is actually an identity in its own right, whether Donald Trump's toupee is a precursor to an alien inversion we will let you know.
that is still the hot topic of the moment.
Yes.
But I've, I have an idea of how it could actually be done. You'd have your group of celebrities.
Yeah, but can you imagine if you have your group, if they walk in and they see Arnie for the first time after they've done the challenge, everyone's going, oh, and all, here's the problem, the complication that I was telling you about. Just let me finish this very quickly.
Yeah, go for it.
The complication I mean is that Arnie is a celebrity in his own right.
Yeah.
They are celebrities in their own right, which means they've probably met at various parties. Some of them might even know him in their personal life on a regular basis. How is that going to work? See, Donald Trump was fine because he was, you know, he actually runs a business. He doesn't really hang out very much with celebrities. That was his ex-wife, Ivana.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which I think is still the most hilarious name, Ivana Trump. The comedy gods were out in force at that point. Seriously.
The comedy gods, they just tipped their hats to... Good job there. Good job, fellas.
No. The comedy gods were out in force. They're the ones who made that happen.
Yes, exactly.
His wife, she liked all her celebrity stuff, but he was basically business, mm-hmm. which is why he could get away with telling Meatloaf that he was fired or whatever it was. So, yeah, I'm not sure how it's going to work when you have a celebrity in charge of other celebrities. Isn't that a bit like the blind leading the blind?
I suppose a little bit.
Maybe. We'll just have to see.
Would have been better if it wasn't Celebrity Apprentice. It was like what they have over here, like the original apprentice.
It's a bit like asking the sheep to teach the celebrities how to be shepherds on Flockstars.
Flockstars! Can I do that? Because I thought of how it could be done. I thought it might have helped yours, but it doesn't really. But you could have had all celebrities sat down at the table and say, well, you'll meet the boss after you've done this, but... If Arnie hadn't been announced, you could have had him sat with the celebrities almost as if he was a contestant. He does the first challenge with them, then when they're in the boardroom, stands up, gets in the chair. I've seen how you work. And
see, that's a possibility. Actually, that's an interesting possibility. They might actually do that, but it only worked on the one. It could only work if they didn't announce that Arnie was taking over.
Yeah, that is another issue with mine.
I think it's the same issue with mine.
Depends on what the celebrities that are actually involved with it as well.
Unless you go for like Guatemalan celebrities.
Or you could just wear like a series of elaborate disguises.
Wow.
Like finally, after the first act, Danny DeVito tears his face off to like reveal he was Arnie all along.
I'm his evil twin.
That could be quite cool.
So, yeah.
Actually, no, saying that, I do want Danny DeVito now to be like the Nick.
Yes. Right, okay. That was the news, I think. Very quickly, though, before we move on to what have we been watching, I brought up a list, but I want you guys to have a think as well. Right. Donald Trump, he kind of minted that phrase, you're fired, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone started using it, didn't they? It's like, when Anne Robinson did You Are the Weakest Link,
and
goodbye.
And that really creepy wink.
No, she didn't do that to the contestants. She used to be...
She used to do that to the camera, which used to scare all the audience.
That made it...
Oh, thank God. I thought it was just me personally. So.
That creepy wink was at the end. But when she got rid of people, it was stony face, You Are the Weakest Link, goodbye. She didn't wink at them. That would be just strange and disturbing if she winked at everybody as they left.
I look
at the Although, bear in mind...
No.
That would be more like, You Are the Weakest Link, goodbye. As if to say, I'll be giving you private lessons later on.
bearing in mind, though, this was the BBC that The Weakest Link was on, so that wouldn't really... I wouldn't really be surprised if the BBC done that. Just let Anne Robinson wink at all the contestants.
Anyway, leaving that to one side. Arnold Schwarzenegger has a massive one-liners because from all his films and everything he's done.
Because that was the
80s.
Not just the
80s.
I'm an
90s.
You forgot he's not a one-decade wonder.
No, that's right, yeah.
He is
the governator,
he will be back.
Of all of his one-liners, which one do you think he will use when people are fired? To replace, you're fired. Which ones could he use? You don't have to tell us now. At some point during the show, just pipe up. Just pipe up during the show. Doesn't matter how serious the discussion is going. just like a Jack in the Box. Doesn't matter how serious the discussion gets. Right, we could be in full flow of a serious discussion and say, just say it.
I've actually already got one.
Okay.
Not for when they get fired, but like when they have that challenge where basically like you have to set up a stall in like the middle of a shopping mall, and just before it starts, he yells out, "Get to the shoppers."
I do have to say, though, because this is one you have to say in there. Well, we're talking about it. If they don't go with "you're terminated" instead of "you're fired," they're missing a trick.
Yeah, because I was just thinking that, like, when they get interviewed after they've been fired. So, Arnie's just terminated you. How are you feeling?
There is another one that they could say instead of "you're terminated." Hasta la vista, baby.
That's the final goodbye. Yes. We should
or,
be this show.
Or consider that a divorce.
Yes.
Anyway, moving on to, we're going to be talking about what we've been watching. So, guys, what have you been watching?
Stuff.
Yeah, I'll go first. I have been watching Hand of God on Amazon Prime.
Is it any good?
It's actually really good, yeah.
Because like, I've been wanting to watch this, and I've not got around to it yet.
Is that based around Diego Maradona?
No.
No, not at all.
Your TV force is weak this week.
I do apologize. I've been focusing on sport recently, but
okay.
So basically, Hand of God. It's about a judge whose son is in a coma after shooting himself after him and his wife were the victims of an assault, and basically the judge starts getting what he thinks are messages from God, telling him to hunt down who did this to his son and kill them.
So basically, it's Taken.
No,
it sounds like Death Witch. Taken in the slightest.
It's like Amityville Horror mixed with Taken.
No.
Yeah.
To me, it's Ron Perlman. No.
It is
not Taken.
You said that
was like going to be the big point. We're like, oh, and by the way, the judge is Ron Perlman.
I'm sorry, but he looks like a badass Santa Claus.
Yeah. He does, man. But to me, it sounds more like Death Wish.
It is a little bit like Death Wish, I suppose, but you know, only if Charles Bronson had visions from God, if Charles Bronson was kind of crossed with the Blues Brothers.
Yes, he is on a mission from God.
Wow,
just walking around with the suit and glasses. Oh, that would just work.
Everybody needs to shoot somebody.
Oh, that's even better.
But yeah, this focuses more on the angle that he's most likely crazy and just having these weird hallucinations.
Yeah.
But also, counter to that, is the fact that actually he's right. So like when basically he follows a trail of imaginary water to a guy who he thinks did it, and like they spend the rest of the episode kind of basically... like, well, no, obviously he didn't do it. You're just a crazy, delusional man. But then at the end, it's real. Actually, he did, and he might be part of something bigger. So that you don't really know how much of it is Ron Perlman being crazy, how much is, like, actual visions from God.
Well, as it's Ron Perlman like that, I can basically guarantee it'll be about 90% crazy.
Oh, yeah, he's definitely crazy on some level because he is Ron Perlman.
There's more craziness in that with it being Ron Perlman than it is... than being God. So,
probably. But yeah, but like, it's actually like this really complex drama. Like, every character, they're really complicated. Like, basically, you have his wife, who is kind of like really manipulative and kind of have all these schemes, but also you can tell she still loves her husband and like she's doing these schemes to keep everything together. Like, you're never really sure kind of where she falls. It's just all stuff like that.
Okay.
Got to admit, I think initially it's kind of, it's a bit, a lot, like, you kind of just thrown straight into it. It's like, all these really complicated characters and dark plot.
That's all right, and so it's not one of them ones that takes ages to get into.
No, but I think it maybe could have used, like, a little bit more build-up just to kind of ease you into things. Mm. Like, I mean, once you get into it, like, it's amazing.
Yeah.
But, like, it is kind of initially just, like, both barrels straight to the face.
Sometimes that's the best way to start, though. Yeah. Sometimes it's best to just, go.
Like, the opening scene is amazing. It's, like, it's just Ron Perlman naked in a fountain, like, kind of yelling at the sky.
After how many drinks? Because it sounds like something a drunk person would do.
Yeah, but this is Ron Perlman, so he'll be sober to do this.
good point. Actually.
This is just what he does. Because I don't think that was even in the script. It's just how they found Ron.
Yeah. That actually might be...
Could actually be watchable, actually.
Oh, yeah, I definitely recommend it. It's really good. Like, I would say it's probably like Amazon's equivalent to House of Cards. Like, that one, like, really big series that they've pulled
that
out all the stops on.
That was a very good show, actually.
Sounds promising as well, though.
I did enjoy House of Cards.
Yeah, House of Cards was good.
Mm.
Oh, also, the best thing about Hand of God is, like, he's got this contact in the police force, who's like a sergeant, but the guy who plays him is the guy who played, like, the leader of the Mayans Bicycle Club in Sons of Anarchy.
Nice!
It's like they're finally working together.
Fantastic.
Nice.
The brothers know he's working for the police.
Yes. Right. So, moving on?
Yeah, moving on.
To Jordan, what have you been watching?
I've been watching a documentary show. Well, basically, it's a docudrama. It's called Seven Wonders of the Industrial World.
Okay.
Oh, that sounds good.
Is this the one that had, like, Isambard Kingdom Brunel and people like that on? Yeah.
Yeah.
With his stovepipe hat. Which is not the same as a top hat.
No, it's not.
But let's clarify. Do not knock the hat.
I wasn't about to knock the hat. Yeah. Why would I want to knock a stovepipe hat? I like a stovepipe hat. I'm just pointing out the fact that it is not a top hat, contrary to popular belief.
Okay, I do apologize. I jumped the gun a little bit. But
yes, you did.
Yes.
Mm. Now give me that food.
But no, got a bite out of it.
But no, it was a very, very good series because they look at stuff like The Great Ship. So there's that. Then it goes into like the Hoover Dam, the Brooklyn Bridge, everything like that. But it shows you exactly what they were going through. Mm. I mean, for the Brooklyn Bridge one,
some of the working conditions for building stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Stuff
unbelievable.
Like that. I mean, we're talking like ancient Egypt pyramid type thing.
No, that was the ancient world, not the industrial world.
But the actual conditions, the force of labor.
The conditions for the workers, that sort of thing. You wouldn't think that would be the case in modern times.
No, for the Brooklyn Bridge one like that, they were working about 70 feet underneath the East River.
Yeah.
Right? And it was because you have to work in air compressed environments and stuff like that. And it's one of them things. You look at it and you think, working down there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, like, when they were building the railways, like a couple hundred years ago, nearly 200 years ago, the people that built navvies, they were in terrible conditions. Many died during building the railways, but they worked unbelievably.
It's one of them things to look through all the design work and everything as well, because the one of them is the Panama Canal.
Oh,
and looking at that is the fact that they try and do it five different ways and then go back to the original way and redo it.
Aye,
and then it finishes off with the Hoover Dam, right? Which when you watch that one
is the Suez Canal in there?
No,
I was going to say because Panama, I can understand.
Yeah,
I don't think Suez should be in there.
No, yeah. Panama's in there, and the Hoover Dam.
Oh,
and watching that one, because they actually build the bypass bits between the dams so they can actually dry it out.
Have you actually seen the Hoover Dam?
Build the dam.
Have you guys been to the States and seen the Hoover Dam up close?
Not really, no.
It's one of the things. The scale is
incredible.
Yeah.
Almost unimaginable.
When you watch the show, right, watch the Hoover Dam one first if you're interested in that. The sheer engineering work behind
the size of it is just ridiculous.
When you watch the show, it makes it look rather small.
Yeah,
yeah.
But this dam is absolutely
every time you see the Hoover Dam on a TV series or in a movie or something like that, it is not selling it correctly.
No,
because the perspective is always distorted.
Yeah, and because the Hoover Dam's curved as well. It throws all of it out.
Wasn't the Hoover Dam the one that Bond jumped off in GoldenEye?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right, now, you know that whole thing, Bond is falling, and, you know, he's falling long enough to make a cup of tea?
Yeah.
That's kind of how it gives you an idea. No, that kind of gives you an idea. Think of a very deep valley, and then somebody basically built a mountain to plug that valley.
Yeah.
That's basically what the Hoover Dam is.
Aye. But it's not Herbert Hoover's only legacy, though, because he wasn't exactly the best president during a difficult time.
No, it was just named after him.
Yeah.
He didn't have any say in the design or the construction.
The only bit he worked, he had a tiny bit of involvement, right, which was creating the settlements for them to actually work close by.
That's basically that all it. He did. Really? He had no input in the design or the construction of the dam.
No.
It's just named after him, that's all.
Ah, fair enough.
So, no, I
but it was, it's a fantastic series. I mean, especially the one where you watch Bell Rock Lighthouse as well.
Yes, that was
that was fantastic, that, because it's literally, you could only work about 4 hours a day.
Yeah.
Like that, before the rocks where the lighthouse is becomes submerged under 12 foot of water.
Mm.
Yeah.
So it's one of the things that you have to work quick, and then they actually build like the little hut.
Yeah.
That actually stay on there, and when you watch it, it's brilliant.
Wow.
So.
I mean, the thing is, that it's the kind of series that just proves just how adaptable people really are.
Yeah.
You know, really interesting series. Good choice there.
I mean, when you watch
Jordan, sorry,
when you watch the Great Ship one, where it's the Great Eastern, Brunel's final ship,
yeah,
and it was it's an economical disaster,
yeah,
right, because it moved 4 feet on its first slip, coming off the slipway, and stayed there for 3 months.
Well, that's because
part of the problem might have been it overheated, because remember, guys, you need to let off some steam, Bennett.
Oh God,
I did it!
He did it.
Although the real reason was because some of the slips were put in unstable.
The chain broke.
Kind of sank a bit.
One of the chains broke, which of course then slewed the ship sideways.
Yeah.
But it's one of the things. The ship hit an 85-foot rib and smashed one of its sides in, and didn't feel a thing. So
that's true.
Right, moving on to you then, Andy.
Yes, I've been watching something we all seem to have been watching. And this is The Game Changers.
Daniel Radcliffe with the beard.
Yes. I mean, originally watching it, I mean, I enjoyed watching it.
Yeah.
But it was the backlash after it.
Yeah, because...
I think the backlash after it was more entertaining than the show, to be brutally honest.
Because Rockstar basically said it was complete and utter... What was the word? Bollocks. That was it. Bollocks. Rockstar said it was complete and utter bollocks. Because it's a typical kind of docudrama, and the BBC acted like a tabloid newspaper, I'm sorry to say, with it. Saying based on a true story doesn't automatically give you license to make stuff up.
No.
I mean, it might be
actually, it should be the opposite.
Yeah.
You stick to facts.
Yeah, try and stick to the facts. I mean, the story was interesting enough without having all of this dramatization. So, yeah. That was my opinion. What was your opinion, Andrew? Andy?
Well, as soon as it started and said Rockstar didn't have any input.
Yeah, I know. I found that quite interesting.
I'm thinking, I wonder why.
So basically they made up all the stuff that Rockstar... Yeah.
Apart from the trial cases, which are accessible anyway. Yeah.
Yeah, but then the BBC would have over-dramatised the trials anyway, so...
Yeah.
But...
So even then it's making it up.
Maybe the BBC were aiming for something so they could launch their own Law and Order type series. So went to the trial and went dun dun. Have the date and the time and where it is. Ooh. Did I just kill that?
that kind of just died.
Talk to the hand.
So it's much like normal Law.
You guys missed that one. That was a Schwarzenegger quote, and you guys missed it.
Oh yeah!
Wow.
Anyway,
wasn't that one from Terminator 3?
Yes.
Terminator 3. That was actually one of the best moments when he used it as well. I was like, that is just hilarious.
To be fair, no one thinks about that Terminator film.
Terminator film. Like you bring it up, and everyone's like, oh, yeah, that was a thing that happened.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But remember, the third and the fourth ones didn't happen.
Stop whining. Another one.
Get it. Actually, that might be one...
My nipples are sensitive.
The fact he got it in there, fair enough.
Rob dared me to say that one.
Yeah. All right, okay. Yes, stop being a bunch of girly men. No, economic girly men. There's one from when he was a governor. Right, anyway, back to
the Game Changers.
The Game Changers.
I mean, it was watching it, was I enjoyed it. I did enjoy it.
The thing is, I found it a bit too melodramatic. I mean, the whole thing with Bill Paxton sitting, kneeling on a golf course going, please God, teach me how to not hate them.
That was
I hate them so much. They're like... You don't know what... my brain has actually stopped working at this point.
Part of me wanted this to be released in the cinema just so critics could have a go at it.
Oh, just...
Oh, trust me, critics will still have a go at it.
Yes.
They will watch this just for that.
What the one thing that really kind of annoyed me was part of the story was based around two people who played these games unbelievably. So you got the one guy that played Vice City like endlessly, then you got the guy who discovered the kind of hot coffee thing the way he played it. They just looked gormless, like they had there was just nothing going on inside. I mean,
that is because of the BBC.
Yes.
It produced a really bad stereotype for gamers. Yeah.
Okay, we're going to leave that to one side because we are going to come back to Game Changers in a bit. Hmm. But, right, Owen.
I wasn't quite sure what to talk about this time. This week, I've been going through a week of rediscovery, but I also watched a fairly good sort of docudrama myself. So I think I'll talk about that. It's about an operation in the Second World War. There's not a lot of people know of. It was an operation called Operation Chariot. Now, from the look of your face, looks I see in the faces.
It rings a bell, but I can't remember what it was.
I don't know why.
Well,
They give names to a lot of operations, and there's been, I've seen a lot of documentaries about different operations. So.
Well, I'll give some background to this. Yeah. It was an operation that was set up mainly for the new British regiment known as the Commandos. The focus of the mission was to disable a dry dock in Normandy, which was the only one in occupied German territory that could be used for one of their mighty ships, the Tirpitz, which, if it had a base it could go to for repairs, could have been disastrous for British relief in the Atlantic.
Yeah. I know the operation you're on about. I didn't see the documentary.
I never watched the channel.
I think it was I can't remember. I think
was it BBC Four or something like that?
I think I watched it on History, but it was a history, sort of docudrama, so it dramatised some of it. But
so it might have been on BBC Four if it was anything like that. Then.
I think it might have been actually, yeah. Because there's been a couple of different ones. There's a Norman documentary Jeremy Clarkson did, but then there's this sort of docudrama one, which is absolutely fantastically well done. It's a fascinating story in itself. How a few hundred British soldiers, no one really believed that they could actually do what they were supposed to do, which is why they weren't given all the support they really needed. But not only did they succeed, they were actually given a certain amount of respect by the German soldiers as well because of what they did. I mean, when you think about it, you've basically gone so far behind enemy lines to complete a mission that...
It was kind of Thermopylae in reverse.
It was a bit, yeah.
You know, it was kind of the Spartans at Thermopylae in reverse, where you had a small group of people actually going into enemy territory to take something out.
Yeah.
All the enemy can do at that point is go, well, yeah, well, that happened.
Hitler apparently was absolutely furious that...
I'm not surprised. He probably wandered round Berlin going, put the cookie down.
Oh, and there's another one. But
you set him up for that one. That's the worst thing about all of it.
Enemies, see them flee before him and hear the lamentation of the women.
Yes. Oh, that's a good one. Conan reference right there.
Wow. Yeah, part of the reason why it's quite a big event, not because of what it did, but it was also the largest award of Victoria Crosses in a single operation.
Yes. Hmm. Yes, it was.
Yep.
Right, okay. It's been a lot of documentaries this week, which is kind of appropriate. I'm going to talk about one that I watched, which was actually only last night. And I'm not going to talk about it much because we are going to be talking about this one as well later on. It's a Horizon documentary. The one that was on last night was called Are Video Games Really That Bad? Now, what I liked about it was the approach they took.
Mm-hmm.
And the nice thing is this leads into what we were going to talk about straight over, so that's fine. What I liked about it was the approach it took, which was very different to another documentary that came out this week, which I'm not going to mention yet. The Horizon documentary, the BBC documentary, they were looking at, you know, how do video games really cause violence in people and children, right? And as ever, there's two schools of thought within the scientific community, but the media always sensationalizes only the negative ones. They don't sensationalize any of the positive ones. They don't sensationalize any of the good stuff that video games do. And it's always a video game like Grand Theft Auto or Call of Duty that gets blamed. But 95% of video games are all ages.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kids can play them. So why focus on just the ones that are supposed to be sold only to adults?
Mm-hmm.
The question was raised as to whether video games actually do cause violence. And there's two clear scientific streams of evidence that are coming out that conflict each other directly. Mm-hmm. One school clearly showing that, no, they don't, because the parts of the brain that are active that give you those violent impulses aren't active while you're playing a video game. What you're actually doing when you're playing a video game is controlling your emotions. And it's more likely to teach you emotional control, according to their understanding, than it is to make you violent. Which is an interesting angle, because nobody really thought, oh, maybe it's going to teach them how to control their emotions. Everybody suddenly went, violent video games must cause violence. But then there's the other school of thought, the other research that shows that there are certain physical vectors that tie in with this whole issue of maybe they will commit acts of violence. And there are kids who have tried to copy what they've seen done in video games.
Oh, there was one when GTA 5 was first released.
Yeah, some kid basically
Stabbed someone because he got a copy of the game first.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. It's like, you can see where they're coming from in that angle.
Thing is, how much of that is from the video game and how much of that is from the home environment?
Yeah. Exactly. You
know, that's the other thing as well that I liked about this documentary was they focused. The second half of the documentary was very much looking at the positive things that video games do. They had a surgeon who he developed a game called Underground, and he is a keyhole surgeon, right? And he developed a game for the Wii called Underground. And this game, you basically have the controllers like that, right? Using these little gun type things and the D-pads and stuff like that. And he had the Wii controllers like that, and he was basically playing this game with these two little things on the screen. You basically move the robots around, stuff like that, and help them move on to the next levels. But what he's actually teaching using this game is amazing. He's actually teaching you how to do keyhole surgery using a game.
Wow.
But we already have a game like that. It's called Surgeon Simulator.
You stole that from me.
But the thing is, this one is actually gamified it more than... this one's gamified it more than Surgeon Simulator, because the level of control you need on this one is almost equivalent to what you'd need if you were doing actual keyhole surgery. But you don't realize you're doing what you're doing is keyhole surgery. You just think it's a game with weird controls.
Yeah. Surgeon Simulator is more like surgery in British hospitals.
I think you'll find Surgeon Simulator is more like surgery in Bengali hospitals.
It's like the simulators when you play them.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. They teach you...
Yeah, the actual simulators.
They teach you on how to do stuff properly.
Not only that, they've found that, playing video games increases stuff like hand-eye coordination. On the documentary, they actually had a group of elderly people, five people who were living in a care home, and had them play a game, just a simple racing game, for 5 weeks, and they measured a marked improvement in their ability to think, their ability to reason, and various other things like that, a marked increase. And even these pensioners, these old age pensioners, were saying, I feel better after playing video games. I'm going to continue playing video games. They make me my head doesn't feel as full as fog.
Was there any improvement in motor skills?
Yes.
So a racing game helped motor skills?
It's one of them things, though, right? It helps relieve stress when you're playing them.
That's one of the biggest things for it. One of the questions that was asked was, maybe there will come a time when instead of taking medication for, depression, the doctor says, here's a game. Play this twice a day for an hour a day for the next 2 weeks and you'll be fine.
So an apple a day keeps the doctor away, not an hour a game a day.
That is going to be an excuse for every video game. It's okay. It's medically recommended.
The doctor told me.
How long is it going to be until we have that, though?
Yeah.
Prescriptions.
Until we can get a video game on prescription. That would be amazing.
GTA, clinically proven to relieve stress.
Yes. Anyway, that leads us into our discussion. Now, given that we've all been watching documentaries, that actually helps quite a bit, because...
I am a special snowflake.
You're a special snowflake whose mic should be on.
That one.
I am the specialist snowflake.
It just sounded like we were just talking to no one.
I'm leaving that in, by the way.
Good, just as I intended it.
That should be our title, The Special Snowflake.
Actually, that might be more appropriate than you realise, because this week, right, we would have talked about this on the game show, but the game show is on hiatus at the moment. So because it's a documentary, I thought it's better to talk about it here. There's a documentary that's come out this week called The Sarkeesian Effect, and it deals specifically with Anita Sarkeesian. Now, the Sarkeesian Effect, I am the special snowflake.
Is that what we're going
to? Is this going to be like a Spartacus? We're all just going to stand up at the end and say, "I am the special snowflake."
No, that's kind of like, "Oh, Captain, my captain."
As soon as someone does like something that's went wrong with that, we should just call them the special snowflake from now on. So basically, we'll just keep calling Andy the special snowflake, because whenever something goes wrong, it's his fault.
Yes. Anyway, the Sarkeesian Effect, inside the world of social justice warriors, was produced by Jordan Owen and directed by Davis M.J. Orini. And I heard that Orini had left the project because he wasn't happy about it, but we'll see. Anyway, it is a documentary about Anita Sarkeesian, who was the video games journalist who was at the centre of what became Gamergate, which was this whole idea that she was trading favours in order to give positive reviews for video games. Hmm. And the video games community suddenly went toxic with it. Do you remember the episode we did a while ago, Andrew, when Craig was on? And we were talking about why major events aren't covered, like
yes,
E3 and stuff like that.
Yes,
we were talking about why major events like that aren't covered in, you know, on mainstream TV. I think there's a direct correlation between that and Gamergate. And this thought has literally just struck me, right? Because it seems like documentaries and docudramas are the new battleground. You know, it's not enough basically having your own little internet forum or your channel or your A or your B or whatever it is. Now there is the capability of just getting a bunch of people who nobody has ever heard of, like a sex worker and a Wikipedia editor.
Yeah, that was weird.
It's the world's leading authorities on Gamergate.
But yes, to be fair,
and making a documentary, which then, you know, if you make it in a certain way, You portray yourself, you somehow, I mean, it seems like they're using documentaries and docudramas to somehow legitimize them, their own particular message, which is really going to cause problems with other documentaries like the ones that we've been watching. Because once people start doing these really heavily biased documentaries, you know, on their own, and it's going to cause problems for documentary makers in general, I think, if this is a trend that is ongoing. So is it a trend that's ongoing? Do you think it's the start of a new trend or something like that? Or is it just the rebirth of an old trend?
I wouldn't even call it a new trend.
I don't know. Anybody,
I mean,
can...
you've got stuff like, I think the most famous case is Super Size Me.
Yeah.
But they haven't been able to replicate any of the results found in that documentary.
No, that's true.
Yeah. But Morgan Spurlock made a fortune.
Exactly.
And that's what really matters.
Yeah.
But I think if you've got the funds for it, not counting YouTube, you can make a documentary. You can get, you'll be able to get some channel somewhere to get
Yeah, but the problem is, you say not counting YouTube. YouTube is what people watch now.
Yeah.
I think what you might have been going on to is before we had YouTube, I mean, it's only 9 year old, used to still be able to get what you'd call like amateur documentaries on the TV in somehow.
Yeah.
But obviously YouTube now means anybody can just...
Yeah, exactly. It's not that it's a new problem. It's just now it's much more widespread.
But yeah, I mean, I was talking about the Horizon documentary I was watching yesterday. I mean, I didn't like the title of it. Are video games really all that bad? It's very... It automatically suggests that
the
video
negativity.
Games... No. The title, the way they've phrased the title, automatically suggests that video games are bad.
Mm. Yeah. I mean,
you know, it's basically, you know, are they really that bad? It's basically saying, well, yeah, we know they're bad, but are they really that bad? Do you see?
Mm. I mean, I watched a program a while ago called Penn and Teller's BS, and they did a show about whether video games are actually the cause of violent nature in kids, and... there is no...
There's no conclusive evidence.
No,
I mean, one of the things that was shown on the documentary yesterday, they actually put people into MRI scanners and scanned them while they were playing first-person shooters.
Yeah.
Right? And only one person out of, like, 30 or 40, only one of them showed, you know, it's the amygdala or whatever it is at the front of the brain. Only one of them had their amygdala active. And that even that isn't conclusive evidence that they'll go out and start beating people up or, believing that they're in the world of Call of Duty.
Aye.
Everyone else had this part of the brain off to the side that controls emotions active while they were playing first-person shooters and really violent video games. So here's the thing. That's pretty much saying, well, okay, if they're controlling their emotions, they're not likely to go violent. That's kind of basic psychology, isn't it?
The issue being, though, right, it's just like with everything, you'll always get one group of people that will make it so the entire genre is stereotyped. Which means everyone won't remember all the good stuff that game's doing, but as soon as a bad thing happens, everyone remembers it.
Yeah, they're called the Mary Whitehouses of this world. But this is the thing, you know, why on earth are we tolerating them? You know, why do we allow them the screen time? Why do we allow them to appear in documentaries and stuff like that? Because we do effectively allow it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, just attention hungry. That's all it is.
It's one of the reasons I don't like Janice Reporter, because she's so... She thinks her opinions are the only ones that matter.
I think the problem is it's that kind of person that
and her
sells
teeth scare
TV.
Me.
Oh, you had to bring it to the teeth, didn't you? You had to bring it to that far down.
I'm sorry, I used to be terrified of Esther Ranson, and then I saw Janice Reporter, and now Esther Ranson is fine.
Fair, yep. I'm pretty sure if we just sold her teeth, that would end all the ivory hunting.
It would. It would. Think of all the elephants she could save. Wow.
Conservation.
Her and Rob Beckett.
Good one.
Thank you.
Anyway, yes. Back to the question then. Are documentaries the new battleground? Are they the new way of legitimizing your message to the world?
And docudramas as well. Yeah. It's a difficult one because they can just be loaded with biased information, so what you've got to
consider is this, right? With the documentary, it's not about what they're loaded with, but about who's watching.
That's true.
Okay. Take the Game Changers one that we talked about on the show earlier, right? The Game Changers documentary had very little in the way of actual stuff that happened. You know, it had nothing about the actual development of the game, which it's been heavily criticized for. It had nothing about, you know, the artistic development of the game, the actual coding of the game. Did nothing to promote the construction, the development of a video game
how little the BBC know about video games.
Apparently, as well, though, the motivation behind the game as well was all wrong.
Yeah, but this is the thing. As Andrew just said, it really clearly highlights...
The BBC know absolutely nothing about video games.
Yeah. Yep.
Mm. But he's thinking,
I didn't want to usurp those words.
I will take that. Yes.
Isn't it also part of the BBC
are hunting you down personally?
Yeah. Isn't it also part of a BBC campaign as well to get people into these kind
into,
of stuff
into,
as well?
Into
yeah.
making video games.
Yeah,
you know,
and
that,
it,
you know,
it doesn't give you the kind of information you need.
It actually even said, though, at the end of the show,
if you want to do coding, and
then right after that was the Horizon documentary. Are video games really that bad? Very leading title, I think. The court case was based on court documents. Mm-hmm. You know, the trial was based on court documents, but all the way up to that point was basically make believe.
Yeah. Mm.
But here's the key thing: there are people who are watching that who think it's true.
Mm.
Yeah.
I mean, the lawyer.
There are people who would watch Game Changers who wouldn't question it because it's on the BBC.
Yeah. Mm. Yes.
Not because it's on... thing is, they wouldn't question it, not because it's on ITV or something like that, but because the BBC wouldn't lie to us.
Yeah. If it was on Channel 4 or 5...
How many people do you know who have that mentality, you know, the BBC wouldn't lie to us?
Yeah.
Think about it. you know a lot more than you think who have that mentality because it's the BBC.
I know a lot of people who equate the term based on true story with this is 100% true. Yeah. This is how it happened.
I had that mentality once upon a time.
The one that I was talking about, the one, Industrial World one, that actually is done by written records and everything of the time.
Yeah, but so, this is what, the thing is, look at the cumulative effect. Based on a true story, shown on the BBC, made by the BBC, the BBC wouldn't lie to us.
No.
Basically, Game Changers then automatically becomes, in people's minds, an actual factual event. They've just used Daniel Radcliffe. So it becomes like a police reconstruction rather than a dramatisation of actual events.
Yeah.
So Daniel Radcliffe...
Do you see what I mean?
Daniel Radcliffe and Bill Paxton give it more legitimacy.
No, they don't. Yeah. Just the fact that it's on BBC and based on a true story, that's all you need. You could have, you know, you could have me and Andrew with sock puppets.
Yeah.
At that point. Okay. You could have me and Andrew with sock puppets. You know, I'll be Paxton. You can be Hauser.
Oh, I want to be Paxton.
Okay, you can be Paxton. I'll be Hauser then. And we just basically...
Oh, God, why? Tell me how I can stop hating them.
I think Terry did it. I think Terry's the culprit. I think he's to blame. You know, that sort of thing. Yeah.
What was up with the Don Simpson poster and all that?
Oh, because he was basically his idol, wasn't he? He was someone he looked up to.
Was that was that a legitimate thing they found and worked around?
Oh. Who knows what the truth is?
This is the problem.
Yeah.
That's the problem. We don't know if that's the truth or not. We just have the BBC's word for it. We just have to take their word for it. Mm. Rockstar have basically said it's total bollocks.
Yeah. I also like the fact that the BBC didn't think it was relevant to...
Just quoting what they said.
Yep. It's a fair enough quote. I also like the BBC found it wasn't necessary to include the fact that... what was the lawyer's name? Thompson or something like that. That he had already gone after Rockstar before. Before Vice City, I guess.
Jack Thompson, yeah.
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 And he's done it ever since.
It changes the way the film looks. It looks like from a guy on a crusade, but if we know the truth, he looks like someone who's on a vendetta. It changes the whole, the way the...
Yeah, but this the thing, he was on a vendetta.
Yeah.
But it made it look as though he was a victim in some way. He wasn't. Yeah. He was doing political point scoring, and Rockstar were just in the line of fire. They were an easy target.
I mean, something like 2 weeks before, well, not 2 weeks, like it would have been like a year before that. Well, it would have been 2001 or something, wouldn't it? When it was like music and all things he was going after, wasn't it?
Yes, exactly. Aye. It's political point scoring, and that's all it was. What about other documentaries? I mean, we've mentioned the Sarkeesian effect. The trailer for the Sarkeesian effect, just to point out a couple of issues with it, right? The director of the documentary, David Orini, is widely viewed as a white nationalist, which is almost the same as a white supremacist, right? So that's one little problem with the documentary. The fact that you've got got people from, like, was it the MRA and various other organizations like that involved with this? Okay. The first person interviewed for the film that appears in the trailer is the author and economist Aaron Clary. And the very first sentence he says contains the word whore, right? There would be loads of people saying he's talking about the prostitutes in Grand Theft Auto, but considering that that's not made clear in the trailer.
Yeah, they've definitely shot it in that specific way.
Yep.
Yeah.
Kind of create a correlation.
So, the comment section for the trailer was just basically, it was full of bile and invective against each other, which was just kind of, leaving that to one side.
It's like
YouTube.
A mini war on the internet.
YouTube comments are a wretched hive of scum and villainy.
That they are.
Yes. The Men's Power Advocacy website, A Voice for Men, accuses Sarkeesian of focusing on money first and ideology second. And Paul Elam has admitted that he has pocketed AVFM donations for his own living expenses, and he's actually one of the people who's speaking out on the video against Anita Sarkeesian.
So he's
because they literally have no idea what hypocrisy is.
He's got no leg to stand on.
One of the guys who's involved in this video, right? One of the guys who's involved in this documentary, I think he's called Jordan something or other. I've forgotten his name. Jordan Owen, right? Wrote a book. It's a thriller that's set in the porn industry, and it has a picture of a naked woman on the front.
Right.
Which I'm sure is a great testament to gender equality.
Yep.
Let's not make any assumptions.
Yes. It's, I don't know where to start. I mean, one of the people that they interviewed was a sex worker. She was another one whose claim to fame was being a Wikipedia editor, yeah. Which half the world is a Wikipedia editor.
Pretty sure the sex worker was like the only female that you saw an interview of in the trailer.
I think there was one other, wasn't there?
One other.
She was like a radio. She was like a radio broadcaster.
Oh
yes.
But to the sex worker's credit, though, she was also a PhD candidate. Yeah.
Good for her.
Yeah, just a candidate.
I missed that bit. Yeah, you're right. She was a PhD candidate. I just find it hilarious that...
But of all the people they could choose, they just... It's ridiculous.
Yes. Yes, it is. It's completely ridiculous. But yeah, there's loads of documentaries like that. Like you said, the Morgan Spurlock one, which assumed guilt, but nobody's been able to replicate the results. What about somebody like Michael Moore?
Yeah.
He's a really well-known documentary.
Yeah. But all his documentaries always have a very clear agenda to them.
Yeah. And his agenda is usually in line with his own beliefs and his own ideologies rather than what might be in the public good.
Yeah.
It's more in line with what's in his own good.
It's not so much balanced, more weighted to his views.
Well, the thing is, if you take something like Bowling for Columbine, which the message was gun control... But it got lost along the way. There were some bits in Bowling for Columbine that I wasn't aware of. The fact that when the Columbine shooting happened, it was also the largest bombing campaign in Kosovo that same day.
Which one was more covered in the news?
The thing that bugs me about Michael Moore's stuff is that you don't know what's truth and what's not. What has he actually just found on the internet in some internet forum that somebody else has imagined?
Yeah, and even if he says the truth, how much of that truth has been edited to help support his point?
Yeah. And that's the problem. I think documentaries are one of those areas where, unless it's something like the one that Jordan was watching, where it's an actual historical thing and it's not affecting somebody's prestige or power or influence. I think that those are the only ones that where we can actually have some degree of fairness and some degree of non-bias.
Or like wildlife documentaries.
Yeah, yeah, wildlife documentaries, because you're not affecting anybody with them.
No, I think even the one I watched it was based on accounts from both German soldiers and the commandos. So yeah.
But the thing is, that's a historical documentary.
Yeah. If they can get people to interview like that, right, that have actually lived through it.
Yeah.
I mean, when you watch the one I was on about, they actually had the actors talking to camera, but
assuming
the roles of the actual people, which they've actually got the transcripts of what they were actually said.
Aye.
So it's one of them things that
I've seen those ones before. But I think with this one, I think there's only like one or two only a few surviving commanders, so they at least interviewed some, but... I mean, documentaries, it's for something like that, I can see why it could be easy to start off based on what you think is right.
I think that...
But you've got to be willing to kind of open your mind and think, maybe what I think is right isn't in the best interest of the public. Not saying, well, this is what I believe and everybody else should believe it. Because then word I can't really see on air.
I think documentaries are one of them ones where it's easy to persuade people to believe what you believe.
They think that it's factual.
Easy like that,
evidential.
Because it's one of them things.
As soon as you say that,
it's all based on true stories.
Yeah.
Three quarters of people like that go,
I mean, I've got people thinking, did The Conjuring actually happen? Because, why would you say that? Well, it's based on a true story.
The exorcism was based on a true story.
It's a very sort of loose word. It's like some of it might be true, but not all of it.
Yeah, they'll play on loads of it.
Exactly. Yeah.
The Exorcist is. It is at the beginning. That's based on a true story. So it's one of them things.
Never spun around.
Yeah, exactly. But that's what it is. It goes along the same lines as that.
She'd be dead if her head spun around.
Yeah. But it's along them lines, though, because it says based on a true story. How many people actually believe that?
That is actually what happened. Yeah. It's
now, granted, part of it, you know, would have.
I can guarantee
that in the past, like, people have been possessed and stuff like that.
Yeah.
The stories, so, if there was a documentary.
Yeah, or people have been thought
based on the story of it.
Yeah.
That would be an interesting watch.
That might hold more ground.
Mm-hmm.
I think really Rockstar need to consider, right, we need to bring the true facts to the people. Because something like this could actually, it's not really gone that far.
I don't think Rockstar actually care.
No. They really do they?
I honestly think Rockstar have basically made a bed out of money.
Yeah.
And they are sleeping on this, you know, they are sleeping on their beds made out of money. And they are happy with their beds made out of money.
Yep.
You know that scene where they throw the money all over the bed and roll around in it?
That's Rockstar do.
No, Rockstar don't need to do that.
No.
They took the money, they made beds out of the money.
They just pull their money blankets up.
Yes.
They're there with their money beds, with their just money
just
blankets.
Just a bunch of 50-pound notes all stitched together.
Just there in their money beds, their money blankets, watching TV on their money cabinets, and their money chest of drawers.
Yes.
Everything made of money. Even the wallpaper's money.
Yes.
$1 bills for wallpaper.
Yeah. The thing that the politicians need to worry about is if a company like Rockstar continues to be as popular as it is, what happens when they do a Donald Trump?
Is that a euphemism?
No.
What's Donald Trump trying to do at the moment?
He's trying to become presidency, isn't he?
Yeah.
So,
but, yeah. What happens if a company like Rockstar suddenly you have like the Rockstar political party?
Well, we all know Rockstar would meet you, walk straight into office.
Yeah, no, but here's the thing. It would get votes.
Well, that's
people would vote for it just because they recognize the name.
Yeah.
Right? They recognize the name first and that's what sells it.
Yeah.
That's how you get votes. What do you think Nigel Farage and UKIP were all over the press? In the run-up to whatever election it was, they were all over the press, and that's how they got so many votes.
Well, Jeremy Corbyn for this one.
Jeremy Corbyn was all over the press.
The same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. That's how you get there. You become a household name.
With Rockstar, if they did become president, if like that company became, well, the company chairman became president, they've got a foothold in the UK as well. They've got some in the UK, so then it could just spread here, and before you know it, Rockstar world domination.
I was talking about taking over the UK rather than America.
All right, okay.
Because if they took over UK the UK... Company, yeah. If they took over the UK, then they can basically pressure the American government into letting their games through
Customs.
ESRB or whatever it is with whatever they want on.
Mm.
Someday some company will do something like this, something really insidious like this.
Yeah.
I don't think Rockstar will actually care care about doing anything like this.
I think it'll be EA that try and do that first.
Yeah. Microsoft or Apple.
No, EA.
No, EA will be the one, because Apple already have the foothold.
Except EA will mess it up and fail horribly, because they're EA.
Okay,
and then Microsoft will buy it and they'll do it.
Yeah, and then turn the servers off at EA.
Unless Google. Google. They're kind of taking over the world, isn't it?
Don't diss Google.
No,
Google loves you, my friend.
Google is your friend.
Hear the word of Google.
The Church of Google.
Google and be saved.
I tell you what, hear the word of Google. I think that would be Google's ad campaign.
Yes, that would be brilliant.
Yeah. Anyway, we're coming to the end of the show. So, yes, we may pick this up again at some point. So, what does everybody think, just as a final thought?
Well, I think there's one thing.
Do you think documentaries should be, in general, that there should be some kind of...
If a documentary like this one, they should have had at least some input from Rockstar, like that, just to keep us as a balanced diamond, basically.
Because
they didn't get any input like that, technically it shouldn't have even been broadcast because of it.
Okay.
Yeah. Actually, I think they could do with something that actually newspapers have at the moment as part of their guidelines.
Yeah.
Is this idea of what's a reasonable interpretation of the information you've been given.
What about something like the Sarkeesian effect? Where does that fit in? Is it a documentary? Can you call it a documentary?
It's starting to sound more like propaganda to me.
It is propaganda. But what I'm saying is like propaganda presented as a documentary.
A new genre for something that is quite clearly...
You know, can you call it propumentary? So it's propaganda and documentary, since everybody seems to like to mash up these words these days?
It's just a fictional drama.
We should call it docuganda.
No, because now you make him sound like a superhero, Africa's first superhero, Doc Uganda.
He will save the African people from the evils of the Western world. He is Doc Uganda.
No. He'll save them from the evil of apartheid.
Oh, nice. The evil villain.
Yeah, apartheid. Or Pappy Tide.
Pappy Tide.
My arch nemesis.
So yeah, Doc Uganda.
Well, that went south.
But yeah. No.
Anyway, the Sarkeesian effect, it's very clearly propaganda. I just wish there'd be
some
kind of quality
control. I think it's
dangerous
territory for documentaries for when they do stuff like this.
Yeah.
More than anything, because, like you said, as soon as you put something like that out, everyone will perceive it in a different way. And yeah. Most people will perceive it the way that the broadcasters want it to perceive it.
Yeah. In the same way that Game Changers was.
Mm.
All right, okay. Well, we're at the end of the show. We're going to leave you there. So, yeah, my brain is fried.
We'll be back.
When?
No, that's easy. That's what I'm gonna tell, isn't it?
Jump the gun a bit there.
Yes, we will be back soon. I have been Rob.
I've been Andrew.
I've been Andy.
I've been Owen.
And I've been Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Mm. And remember, if it bleeds, we can kill it.
Yeah. Nice.
Get to the chopper.